This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Ralph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. Project, welcome to your favorite day of the week, the after show. And it's the after show on any day. I mean, you could be listening to this on Friday, Wednesday, Thursday, Tuesday, Monday, whatever it is. Wherever you are, we hope you're safe, enjoying life. Which, obviously, is still...
Which, what you mean by that is not in Victoria.
Yes, yeah. Well, I mean, come on. We've got international listeners here. True. They could still be in a tough situation.
Or anywhere in the States.
Yeah. Whatever you do, please vote Kanye. Can you believe that?
No, I haven't. I don't know what you're referring to.
Dude, Kanye is running legit for running for president.
You know, Joe Rogan was talking about people like, oh, you know, Joe, you should run for president, which I'm sure lots of people are saying. You'd probably do a decent job, but he was like...
Joe Rogan?
Yeah.
Oh, he's never going to do it.
He was spot on about it. He's like, guys, he's like, I have no fucking clue. He's like, I've never done any of this shit. He's like, I would be the worst president you could imagine.
Yeah.
Which is like, give me the truth for any of these popular people.
Well, because I can't remember who made some commentary on this, but essentially Obama, probably one of the most beloved presidents of all time, but his policies that he actually ended up getting through were actually quite like racist and democratic. That's what he, racist and conservative, apparently. If you were like to look at the policies objectively, and I don't know what ended up passing through. I know he was pushing for Obamacare. Mm. That was like a really good thing. But apparently, if you just looked at them objectively and just taken him out of it, you would have thought that it was a white conservative party that made those policies. So, I don't know. I thought that was pretty interesting. But, I mean, it's just having that job, it's not really a job for one person. It should be a job for like 5 or 6 people. You know, it's so difficult. So, so difficult. It's so much stress. Yeah. Your brain cannot function on that much stress. Like, it's not possible. Imagine going to bed every night being like, fuck, I'm like in charge of so much important shit. It's just way too much. Way too much.
I would abuse the power. Be like, dude, I'm so busy. You want me to do that? You see what's on my plate?
You could, yeah. You could get away with a lot.
Get away with anything.
Yeah, get away. Yeah.
How are you feeling? I'm so stressed. Shut the fuck up.
You know, I'm thinking I'm going to need 4 days straight of massage. Dude, that's why our Prime Minister escaped to, where did he go? Hawaii in the middle of the bushfires? Was it Hawaii?
Yeah, it was a family holiday. Poor bloke.
Fuck. Bad timing.
And just copped it.
Bad timing.
It was bad timing.
Bad timing. Yeah. Anyway, we're here to talk about health and fitness. All right, guys. So, one of the things I was thinking about, I was listening to on the car here, I think one of the best skills that you can ever learn as a human being, and I think it really happens the older you get, is to take key concepts from any area of life, any domain of life, training, nutrition, work, relationships, and be able to transfer your skills in one area across to other areas. I think when you first start out and in life, when you know you're on level one, you don't have that ability yet, literally because you haven't had enough experiences with life to be able to take what you learned as an athlete, for example, and transfer it into business, to take what you've learned from nutrition and transfer it into relationships. And believe it or not, everything is interconnected. And I think the most successful people can transfer the skills they learn in one area to as many other areas of their life as possible. And the example I was thinking of on the weekend was I was driving out to the in-laws for Sunday lunch. And it's really far out. Hmm. It's a really far drive. It's like an hour and 20 minutes. And the further you start to go out of the city center, the more you start to realize is, if my car breaks down now, if I have some kind of issue or I need roadside assistance, I think I saw a billboard for roadside assistance. I just thought to myself, the more screwed you are. If you break down around here in Bondi, that's sweet. Yeah. I'm leaving my car. I probably won't need it for a week. I can get Ubers.
Yeah.
I can get public transport. I can get taxis. I can ride a bike. You can skateboard. You can run. You can get the train, get buses. There are so many options and there's essentially no excuse for not getting where you need to get to, right? Hey, it might be a little bit more inconvenient, might cost you some more money, but it's not going to ruin your day. If your car doesn't start in the morning, you're like, fuck, all right, just leave it. If your car breaks down or it doesn't start out there, you are so screwed. You're so stranded. Like, it'll ruin your whole day. It'll ruin your week. You could miss an appointment. You could miss like a major appointment. Like, it's really bad. I mean, I know there's some public transport out there and there's some Ubers and stuff, but it's not reliable when you're that far out. And it just made me think about, you should never be over-reliant on any one thing. So, I thought about it as it relates to, say, finances and business, for example. If you have, most people have one job, right? And so, when they lose their job, it's like, the world is ending because they have no other place to get an income. Whereas if you're smart, you'll take some of that money, put it aside and put it in an investment. So you have like assets. Maybe those assets aren't generating income for you, but they've increased in value so that, yeah, if you lost your job, you know, okay, I can sell these assets and get more money than what I had. And I can basically, you know, put it into savings or keep myself afloat or liquidate it. Same thing if you've, you know, got a bit of a side hustle or something, or, you know, you have other income streams, you know, you're not as screwed. It's not as much of a panic when lockdown hits and everyone loses their job. Same applies for nutrition. If you only prescribe to one diet, if you're only like, I'm paleo vegan, when you go out for dinner, you can't enjoy yourself. Like, you can't stick to diet. You can't be at a social setting with the in-laws and they bring out all the Polish food and, you know, you're like, oh, I don't know what that is. I can't eat that, this, that. It's stupid. Is this piece of celery, was this around when the dinosaurs were here? Like, you don't want to be asking those questions. It's stupid. It's inflexible. You ultimately can't reach your goals as well. Same as training. How many people went into lockdown and they're like, I don't have anything to train with. I don't have the machines. Like, I don't know how to train without a Smith machine or a leg curl or a leg extension. They just didn't have any tools in their tool belt. And it's like, the more skills and tools you had, the easier it was to stay fit and healthy and make progress in lockdown.
That was probably what I liked the most about CrossFit, was just adding a few more tools to it. Because I've always been into exercise, but yeah, I was probably more inflexible.
Yeah.
So if I was traveling, like, I would travel, you know, since I can remember traveling, one of the first things I've done is find a gym where I'm at. I'm probably less likely to do that now, still just as much into fitness, but just have a few more things I can do, like make up workouts more without as much stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think it's just in life, it's just important to not get too... obviously, you can get specialized in, you know, your career, or you can get specialized in your sport or whatever, but I think it's just a good thing to keep in the back of your mind that you are putting yourself in some ways at a disadvantage. If you've only... Especially now with the... I don't know who was listening to talk about it. I think it was, you know, actually Tim Ferriss has turned his book Tribe of Mentors into an audiobook, and he started previewing it on his podcast. I don't listen to his podcast very often, but I did listen to this audio preview. And I think it was Yuval Noah Harari, who's the author of Sapiens, in his section of the book talked about what skills humans will need come 2040. Because he was basically saying, faster than ever, what's happening is what you learn in school in the first half of your life is becoming redundant later in life faster. So, you know, 100 years ago, everything you learned in the first half of your life in school, because essentially this is what he's saying is like, you know, basically up until you're 40, you're trying to learn as much as possible, accumulate as many personal skills as possible, work skills, career skills, so that when you get to 40, you can kind of focus more on security and safety and like lock down and capitalize on what you've already got. But he's like, come 2040, your skills will have expired and you won't have the ability to lock down at the pace at which technology is changing and the work is changing. He's like, you know, jobs are becoming obsolete every day because of technology at a much faster rate. So he's like, the skills that he would actually teach people is like personal resiliency and like adaptability. And I just think that these are just like core principles with anything, with all the stuff I just talked about. They're just so essential. And you just want to keep that in the back of your mind. It's becoming more and more relevant to have more and more skills. And so, yeah, if you get really specialized in one area, you can become redundant overnight. If you're a truck driver your whole life, Elon comes up with self-driving trucks, you have no other skills in your life. And so just things like that. And obviously, it's not to say you can't upskill and reskill. I think it's just that people, you know, generations are expecting that they won't have to and that they can rest on their laurels. And he's saying like, no, like be prepared to be constantly reskilling and upskilling. And I think that's super important, especially when it comes to health and fitness as well.
Yeah, it probably hasn't hit that hard in health and fitness yet, but it obviously will. You know, I don't think health and fitness has changed that much in 20 years. Obviously like new trends and stuff like PT and just working with human psychology is the same, but I'm sure the big change will come.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, who's to say there's not going to be some kind of PT robot thing that takes
it will
you
come.
Yeah, out on the floor, or some, you know, magic supplement or dietary pill, and they, you know, you take this pill and it affects your gut biome and you don't hold any body fat anymore.
Even the skills might just be like, you know, taking blood tests on the fly in the gym, reading the results, stuff like that, right?
Yeah, like even that that piece of machines that Sean Greeley, our coach, showed us that. It's this machine, right? Can't remember what it's called, but all the biohackers use it. Look, for us exercise enthusiasts, we love the process of exercise, so we'd never use it. But they've created this machine basically where you like replicate a leg press or a bench press, a pull down or whatever, and you do like two reps of the machine. This, yeah. You push against it and it creates like the maximum amount of force for your muscle that you can like honestly maintain and grow muscle with like 5 reps.
Yeah.
Like three times a week.
It's like you're sitting down and if you could imagine you're like pressing with your legs and pressing with your arms, right? It's like full body. You can like press in any direction with your limbs. And no matter if you're pushing or then you're pulling it back, like every direction you're going, you can push as hard as you possibly can.
The machine matches the resistance perfectly.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah, in a few minutes of this, like your whole body is shaking.
It's like, imagine doing 5 reps of this bench press, leg press, and then you're going 10 up, 10 down. That's what it looks like for like 5 seconds. They're like, cool, that's it. That's the end of your session. You've done 5 reps and that's the same stimulus. That's the same results you get from a full weights training session. But they're saying it's even better because it matches the strength curve properly.
Yeah.
Can't remember what it is, but it's like some weird biohacking thing. But anyway, I'm just saying this is the fringes, these are the spectrums of technology people are experimenting with in the health and fitness field. It seems ridiculous now, but come 2040, this could be the most mainstream thing. It could be a gym full of these things. Like people are so hyper-connected. The workforce is so different. Time is so much more scarce. People don't have time for an hour and a half, a 2-hour workout. You're a hippie freak if you want to go, you know, work on your pull-up progressions, you know. But we just go in the gym, we hit this machine for, you know, 20 minutes and then we're out and we're all jacked and we're all shredded. Like, it just could be how it is. You just don't know.
It's called OsteoStrong. Tony Robbins is an investor in it.
Yeah, yeah.
And that guy, Billy Beck, is his trainer and like trains loads of celebrities and stuff. Mm. He's got it. It's 15 minutes of torture.
Yeah. Anyway, it's hard, but yeah, it's super interesting. All right. So, I'm Phoenix, very, very excited to talk about this product. So we partnered with a new company. We couldn't speak about them last week. I think we mentioned it very briefly just because they hadn't released the product in Australia yet, but we can finally talk about it. So one of the things that you and I just don't really grow a beard, but it doesn't mean we don't have to shave every day, but it just seems ridiculous bringing out an actual straight razor for our face every single day. And so I've used like... just the regular close kind of clippers. What are they called? Just clippers?
Yeah.
I guess like the buzz
clippers, yeah.
Buzz clippers or whatever that they use to cut your hair. And you get obviously the really, really close ones for your face.
Mm.
And this company, Manscaped, we ended up getting connected and partnering with them. And that was... So basically they're for male genital grooming. That's really their whole thing. But... it's not just, I mean, they have all their products for downstairs, but I'll tell you what, I wanted to do this because I was like, if this is a really good clipper, I'm just going to use it for my face as well. And I compared it between a product I've been really happy with. I think it was like Philips. It's like a really expensive Philips clipper. I think it was like $250. And I compared it with the Manscaped. And what I did is I shaved one half of the mustache and then the other half with the other side.
Right. When you told me this, I thought you meant one ball with one and one ball with the other.
No, so with the mustache. And the idea was like, who can cut it the closer? Because the closer, the better, right? The closer means you just have to do it less often. And so basically what I would do, I clipped both sides, half and half, and then used them on the opposite sides. And if one cut the other side, it's obviously a closer shave. The Philips could not cut the Manscaped side, but the Manscaped side cut more off the Philips. So it is super close shave. Now, the thing that's most exciting about this product is that it's anti-nick. And I was talking to my barber about this before... I even got the product. I'm like, hey, have you heard this? Have you seen this? Like, dude, I'm getting hit with their ads all the time. I'm like, yeah. Do you believe that there's anti-nick technology? He's like, dude, it's impossible. He's like, trust me, I've studied this. He's like, I've understood it. I even looked at their technology. He goes, it's not possible. He goes, he's explaining to me the engineering of how the blades work and how they shift together. It actually doesn't nick you. I don't know. It's like a weird feeling. It's like it's almost trying to like pull the hair out, like right before it nicks you, but it just stops. It doesn't. Nick, I don't know how it does it.
Well, they have a trademark on the technology. It's skin-safe technology.
Yeah, I don't know how they did it. It's honestly confusing because it looks exactly the same. Maybe it's how the blades are shaped. I'm not sure. But anyway, this company's awesome. Mm. Manscaped. So, I mean, really, there's lots of different uses for this, as you can tell. But I'm going to just speak specifically right now to the single guys that listen to this podcast. Okay, single men of the My Muscle Project, listen up. That for a long time, the culture of genital grooming for male and female has been way too heavily skewed and the standards have been completely almost hypocritical towards women. The standard enforced on women is unfair compared to the standard enforced on men. Come 2020, the tables have turned. Women have the same expectation of grooming and care down there that we have put on them for decades. And so it's only fair, guys, that... you now take the same level of care. And look, I get it. That before there was not like, there was not a good company out there. It was like, you're piecing things together yourself. This is like the one-stop shop, okay? If you're a single guy and you want to make an impression on the first date, not assuming anything, but let's say that, you know, you get lucky, things are going well, you can actually make a legitimate impression there. You can like stand out from the crowd right now. It's really easy. It's waterproof. I tried it in the shower. It's crazy. In the dark. It has its own little light.
Dark is not recommended.
Yeah.
I would turn the lights on.
But I pulled it off in the dark, in the shower. It's waterproof. Obviously, when you're cutting dry hair versus wet hair, it's a little bit different. Mm. But the best part after is the creams. So they have like the ball cream and the ball spray and stuff. It smells amazing.
Mm.
It smells like cologne. It's actually incredible. And it's like, it is a different level of care. And once you start, you almost can't ever go back. You can't stop.
Yeah, it's an area where, particularly if it's for the shaver, like you can't accept low standards. I've had low standards in the past. And it's an area of the body where the consequences are dire.
Yeah. If you're a single guy, you can't afford to waste these opportunities. And I think it gives you a new level of confidence when you take care of it. So
yeah,
I think you guys should absolutely check it out. If you're interested, go to manscaped.com. That's MANSCAPED.
And we've tried the 3.0, right? The new one.
It's the new one. Yeah. You can get the new one on the website. So manscaped.com. If you're in Australia, .com.au. And then, use our code, guys. So MMP is going to get you 20% off. 20% off. Pretty good deal. It's not a 10% deal. It's not a 15. It's fucking 20. So use that code MMP, one word, when you check out. Single guys, don't disappoint the single women in your life. Okay. Cool. So, what have you got going on here? Testing?
Yeah, this was an issue, and I'm surprised there still is one, but it is a massive issue. So, if you're in Australia, like COVID has kicked basically back off in one state of the country.
Victoria.
The rest of the country seems pretty sweet, but that one place, it's worse now than it was basically when it first came in March.
Oh, is it worse now?
Yeah, they're getting record cases.
Oh, my God.
Record numbers of cases overnight. And so they go around, and now it really shouldn't happen because they've got so much more testing, right?
Right,
than they,
right.
They did in March, but 10,000 people have refused the test in Victoria, which is absolutely nuts. It is pretty much only because of conspiracy theories around the test. Like, it is the most harmless test you could imagine.
What's the conspiracy theories around the test?
Well, it's not just the test. So there's like some things that like, hey, it's it's whatever. It's not good for you. But people are saying, hey, I just have no reason to do this because like this coronavirus doesn't really exist.
Right, right.
And this is just like another excuse for the government to come in and like
get data,
get swabs and like, then sell it to like whatever. Right.
So they can replicate me in China.
Yeah, which I understand because, sometimes companies and governments like don't do exactly the right thing. But this is the type of stuff I think has to become, more socially inappropriate because the harm done is crazy. Like the harm done over the last 3 months is nuts to so many people. And it's not really the deaths, more just the economic consequences of it. And if people are like either just so uneducated or so selfish that they can't go through with a test, I don't see how we'd ever get through any like real massive issue. Like if we had like another world this war now, I feel like we'd be so fucked.
Yeah.
Because I feel like people actually worked together back in that time. If they were going around like, hey, we need to do testing in the 1940s, before a nuke hits us, everyone would be signing up for that shit.
Mm.
The internet, you would think, would really help people get on the same page in terms of information, but seems to have done the reverse.
Yeah, man. I think that Sam Harris put it really well on his podcast, which I encourage everyone to go listen to. If you haven't yet, you can go listen to it. It's called, the podcast is called Making Sense, but the episode I referred to last time is called Can We Come Back From the Brink? But yeah, basically one of the things that he talked about here is essentially social media is the biggest human experiment we've ever done, and we don't know how it's going to end, and no one is regulating it, and no one is controlling it. Did you see Facebook, heaps of companies boycotted Facebook, their advertising, Mastercom, Adidas, Coca-Cola, Pepsi, all these companies.
It's only been negative during COVID.
Yeah, and I think it's just, it's a amplifier to bad ideas. And there's one thing that Elon talked about on Joe's podcast, which was the one thing I worry most about an interconnected world is bad ideas spreading really quickly. And I think he's really right there, is that
he's spot on.
Man, people just, people are really gullible, right? Mm. People have confirmation biases. People want answers to things that, they want simple answers to things that don't have a simple answer. And people are unwilling to engage in long form conversation. I honestly think Twitter, I've said it before, Twitter is the worst social media platform of all platforms because essentially it tries to distill down extremely complex topics, which will take hours and hours, if not days and weeks of conversation to establish kind of correct points in, in a couple of characters, you know, and it's very toxic, very, very dangerous. But yeah, I think that anyone that's refusing a test, you know, you're absolutely like selfish, stupid. You don't seriously understand the ramifications of what it means to spread like a global pandemic like this. And yeah, obviously, you know, these institutions, these scientists, this shit was happening fast. Like no one knew exactly what to do in the beginning. They're human just like you and me. And they're trying to do their best. And like, hey, they made some studies, they did some stuff, and hey, maybe they were a little bit wrong and they had to go back on what they said. And hey, we've done new studies and it turns out it's this, and it can't live on surfaces, or there is an asymptomatic transmission, whatever it is. But they're allowed to correct themselves. Mm. They're allowed to do new studies and come out with different ideas. You can't then turn around and be like, oh, well, you said this first, so how can we trust anything you say? Like, imagine being in their position. Imagine trying to do what they do, try and fight a global pandemic, rush vaccines and studies and all this stuff. It's they've got one of the hardest jobs in the world. And, you know, I think criticizing them on stuff like they did way back then is just completely unfair.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just not the best way to make a stand. Like, they definitely make mistakes, and you can have your own opinion. But the way to do it generally is like, hey, comply, go along with the best thing we know at the time, support it, and then argue about it after that.
Yeah. Yeah, so please go get a test if you come into contact with people, and just download the damn app, for God's sake, the government app. They track everything anyway. If you've ever used Google in your life or Facebook, they have everything on you. So I don't know why you're so worried about another app taking your data. It's silly. Anyway, so obviously, guys, we're third week of Project Strong. Amazing feedback so far from anyone. If you guys haven't joined up to Project Strong yet, make sure you do. Make sure you check it out. mindmuscleproject.com/strong. Obviously, where I think the most difficulty for people in their strength training journey is they get bored really easily, and they program hop. That's just one of those things that I get it. I used to program hop as well. I still program hop. What we considered with Project Strong is, let's make this exciting. Let's make each cycle something new. Let's go powerlifting style training. Let's go into strongman style training. Let's go into CrossFit style training. Let's do a variety of different domains so that people don't get bored. So they kind of feel like they're program hopping within one program. So I think that's one of the most exciting things you can expect from Project Strong when you join up, is that it's exciting. There's lots of variety on there, and you never feel like you just rinse and repeat the same thing over and over again. But of course, there's enough consistency in there for you guys to make long-term progress to your overall strength. So there's always a 7-day free trial for anyone checking out, and it's super affordable anyway. It's less than half the cost of your phone bill each month. So you can go to the mymuscleproject.com/strong for your 7-day free trial.
Awesome. And we got some good listener questions this week. Sam Scholl actually emailed it in, which is another way you can do listener questions. He asks, and this is something we talked about, I think we talked about it on In the Black.
Okay.
When we did like the things we would do if we owned CrossFit episode.
Yeah.
Which was very
fun. That was a good episode.
Yeah, very fun. Yeah. No, unfortunately, we still don't own CrossFit, so it's not being implemented. But we talked about splitting CrossFit movements into sport versus affiliate. And he asked what movements would fall into each of the categories. Like, what CrossFit movements would you avoid if your goal was longevity and getting fit? And what movements would you put into the sport?
Mm. Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, we'd spend too long naming all the affiliate movements. So let's just name what are the sport movements, because there are less of those. So
yeah, well, as a general rule, the way I was thinking about it when we talked about the topic was the movements that you do in CrossFit that only get you better at the movement and have nothing really outside of that.
Less transfer.
Yeah, are the ones I would generally put into the sports category. So if you look at like keeping pull-ups in general, they really only get you better at keeping pull-ups.
Yeah.
That's like the general gist of it. You know, you don't really see people do lots of keeping pull-ups, and lots of other things improve.
Yeah.
Whereas like a strict pull-up generally doesn't. You get better at strict pull-ups, and you get better at a whole bunch of other pulling movements in the same category.
Yeah.
And I would say like on the whole, that's like kind of the framework I was looking at it with.
My framework was more like how much skill development is required to be good at this movement versus the return on the time people are investing into exercise. So if someone has like, you know, if someone has 5 50-minute sessions a week to invest in exercise, okay, that's a lot of time, or 5 1-hour sessions, whatever it is, it's a lot of time they can invest into training. It might be worth throwing some high level skills in there, like Olympic weightlifting, because they have more time to invest. Most people only give you 2 to 3 hours a week to invest. And if they're coming to an affiliate, spending a whole hour with their goal is, you know, get in shape, feel good, feel better. Yeah, you can spend an hour learning snatch technique, but they're going to need that for a long time. They're going to need that for years. So they're going to basically put aside an hour for years to learn the snatch properly. And I just wonder if that's always the best return on their investment. So really when I thought about the sport is it's like, okay, what are the things you have to be really good at to get like a good training stimulus and benefit out of? Because yeah, you can do an hour of snatch technique with the broom and the empty bar, but you're not going to get that much carryover into like more muscle, like stronger joints, you know, body composition changes, training stimulus. Just not, it's not really going to happen as well as, you know, if you did some good deadlifts and worked on your deadlift technique, did some, you know, dumbbell rows and some rotation work and then did condition workouts. It's just a better time investment. It's just how it is. So really the sport, I thought snatch, overhead squats and snatches. I thought, yeah, all the kipping variations, butterfly pull-ups, chest to bar pull-ups, kipping muscle-ups, all that sort of stuff. Kipping handstand push-ups as well. I think really anything that is using momentum and isn't strict, isn't strength building, really falls into the sport category. And then I guess anything that is done in the affiliate, which almost just doesn't really make sense equipment and space-wise. That was probably the other aspect of looking at it. So for example, like rope climbs. Most gyms have 1 to 2 ropes. Doesn't really make sense to try and get a class to get good at rope climbs. And then stuff like carrying yokes and carrying farmer's walks and stuff. That stuff's in the games and that, but it's not like a typical CrossFit movement. It's more of a strongman movement, but the equipment and stuff and the space fairly limited on that sort of thing.
Yeah, and you know, this goes over same into like strongman as well. It's not like just a CrossFit thing. Like there's a lot of movements in like World's Strongest Man that are just really for the sport, not really for longevity.
Yeah.
And this is, because sometimes you can't just go into the gym and just do gym stuff. You need to like create a different exercise that is not maybe the best exercise in the world, but it's mad at testing for whatever reason, right?
Because,
you know, it's just, you know, some movements are just really good for testing and some movements are really good for long-term development.
Yeah. I'd almost put double unders in there as well.
Mm.
Yeah. This doesn't really seem worthwhile.
Okay. Next question. Team Rhodes. Thoughts on stevia. Good or bad as a regular part of daily diet? I think we've heard quite a bit on this before. I think we have had the question before as well, just more around the sweeteners. But the studies I've seen, and I think they've done a ton on stevia now, is that in general, it's harmless. It's just like a harmless food. Sometimes people think it's like way better because it's natural, but there's a bunch of natural ones out there as well.
Well, sugar's natural.
Yeah. And, you know, honey is obviously a really good sweetener. Obviously has calories, a lot more calories than stevia in the amount that you have it. But there's a bunch of other ones like monk fruit and stuff as well. In general, like, yeah, they're pretty much all harmless. They sometimes get some bad consequences, but you always just look at how much and always the amount is just crazy.
Mm.
Like it's never amount that, because you need so little of this stuff for it to be sweet. If you have a lot, it just tastes horrific. In general, in amounts that most people actually consume it, it's harmless. And so I know people are like, oh yeah, but it's like in your protein powder and then it's also in this. It's still not very much.
Mm.
Like it's still not loads and loads. And in general, it just really seems to be harmless across everything.
Yeah, I agree. I wouldn't add anything to that.
But sometimes it doesn't taste very good. Which is why I think some of the other sweeteners are good. But I know True Protein mostly uses stevia and they seem to be able to make it work very, very well. So, yeah, I think you've got bigger problems than how much stevia you're taking in.
Mm.
Blake Wiz, have you guys ever done any long distance running or marathon distance?
No, but I plan to one day just literally be in a really good training cycle, feeling really fit, doing some regular running and just like signing up for a marathon that week. I really want to do that.
Yeah, it's never really been my goals to do anything like that or like part of the sports I had growing up. Don't think I'm really built for them.
I did cross country.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. And the 800.
You are probably more definitely built for it than me. I'm like the nugget shape, so I haven't.
The waddler. The waddler.
I will die of blood loss from chafing.
Look at those. Look at that kid's huge glutes.
Before I think.
Why is he on the track? Why is he not sprinting down the 100-meter track?
So, no.
Well, I'll tell you what. When I did cross country in school, I fucking hated it so much. But this is how I used to do it. This is how I hated it. In protest, I would always take myself to the back of the pack. I'm like, nah, I'm not trying. This is shit. I hate it. So, I'd always purposely, like literally wait till I'm last. And then, I would just make it a game with myself.
Hunt them down.
I'm just going to try and pick off as many as I could. And I would often win. I'd just pick everyone off. Because you have no idea about pacing when you're a kid. I didn't even know I was pacing at the time. I was just protesting against doing cross country because it sucks. So boring and it hurts. I was just chilling at the back and then everyone starts to get really tired and slow because basically when you're a kid, everyone just starts sprinting at the start, right? Unless you're like a freak kid and you actually do little athletics, but most kids have no idea what they're doing. And then basically everyone just turns to close to like a waddle to a walk, and I'm just there, just like jogging past them, and it's just picking them off.
Yeah, I do think though it's getting, I don't know, it's getting more popular, but it is going to stay very, very popular. Even though people are like, oh, it takes so long, and like everyone's like, you know, into the quick fixes and stuff now, I do think endurance training is like, it's getting more popular. I don't know if you saw, but Whoop now, actually, it's not a Whoop ad or anything, but it combines with Strava.
I saw that.
Yeah. They have. We did this whole discussion on it. If you have a Whoop, I know loads of people have Strava as well, you can like sync up your long distance running or cycling with Strava to your Whoop as well.
Interesting.
Helen Kirk, what's a front load and back load mean? Bodybuilding competitors talk about this. Front load and back load.
Oh, yeah. Well, front loading and back loading, it just refers to whatever the any time period, you're either doing more of it at the front or more of it at the back. So, for example, if you're front loading in a week for, say, carbohydrates, you're going to eat the majority of your carbohydrates earlier in the week, versus if you're back loading, you'd probably eat the majority of your carbohydrates at the end of the week. If you distill that down, if you zoom into a day, front loading your carbs would be eating the majority of your carbs at the front of the day, and then back loading would be back of the day. So that's really as simple as it is. I think in the context of bodybuilding, most of them are referring to how they're loading them, not really their training, but how they're loading their food for that day, whether they're front loading a certain macronutrient, so they're eating it mostly at the start of the day, or they're eating it at the end of the day. Usually it kind of pivots around that when they train. So if someone trains in the mornings, they might be like, hey, I like to front load all my carbohydrates in the morning right before I train. Or if someone says, hey, I train in the evenings, they might be like, hey, I like to backload my carbs at the end of the day after my training session. At the end of the day, it doesn't really make much of a difference unless you're like, you know, really, really chasing every single percent of human performance. You're a bodybuilding competitor in this context or a CrossFit athlete. But front and backloading macronutrients and stuff, it's an individual thing. You might do it for like convenience or taste, culture, you know, maybe if you're, you know, big on cereals, you like to just keep carbohydrates the funny day. But at the end of the day, for most people's goals, it makes no difference. And focusing on it and stressing about it is just unnecessary for the amount of positive benefits you'll get out of it.
Yeah, it's much more usually for most people, it comes down to like energy levels.
Mm-hmm.
Like front loading and back loading your calories and macronutrients. It's so much more around like lifestyle and energy levels than the ultimate impact it has on the way you look or the way you perform.
Yeah, like ask yourself the question, would you, if I told you front loading your carbs at the start of the day or front loading your calories, or let's just go calories for sec. So let's say you have 2,000 calories in a day. Let's say, okay, I'm going to tell you to front load. So you're going to have 1,300 before midday, and then the rest you're going to have, the last 700 you're going to have at the end of the day. But if you front load, you'll train hard and you'll train better. But most of the day, your energy will be worse after that training session. You're not going to be able to focus much. You're not going to be able to get much work done. You're not going to be much fun to be around. But you will train better. Would you prefer that? Or would you rather just give out some of that extra percent of training performance and goals, but your energy throughout the day is much better. Your mood is better. Your energy is more balanced. You just feel better. You've got more focus. Like, what would you choose? That's often kind of what you're discussing, Raph. That's kind of the decisions most people make around this.
Yeah, I don't know if you remember, we had a client like this once. We did it on a retreat. He's like, oh, you know, my biggest problem is like energy levels. And we're like, okay, let's just dive into nutrition pieces. And he's like, yeah, cool. You know, just good diet in the morning, you know, like some like whole foods, some oats, some protein, blueberries. I'm like, sweet, no problems there. And then I'm like, yeah, you know, just quick pre-workout, hit training 9:30, and then like some protein. I'm like, whoa, like, what's the pre-workout? He's like, oh, you know, just have this pre-workout. I'm like, okay, cool, let's see the pre-workout. Get into it. He's having like, it was like 470 something milligrams of caffeine. Insane.
It's like double
at 9 o'clock before his training session. He's like, yeah, don't get it. At like 11, 12 p.m., I just get this crash. I feel really good up until then.
Crash.
And then I get a crash. And anyway, that was an easy coaching moment.
Yeah. And then turned out he had 800 calories total in the day.
Yeah.
And it's like fully grown male. Yeah. A lot of errors.
You don't want to be front loading. Front loading your caffeine is good, but not front truck loading.
Don't get a cement mixer and pour it into your face. Is that it?
Yeah, we have a very good Netflix documentary, but before we do, this is a very, very common issue for me now, is that I'm on my screen at night. And if you are up in the night, you realize that it is a great time for screens and it is very painful to not be able to enjoy your screen at that time. It's just like how we live now, right? There's just shit on the screen that I want to look at. That's just life. And I think, you know, some people can get away with having no screens after sundown, but particularly during winter, that is not happening
for me. 5 p.m.
Yeah. It's definitely not happening. And you know, you're up, it's still dark. So what I found to be the best way to do it is honestly just have blue light blocking glasses on.
Yeah.
I just like have them on. I keep them next to my bedside table. They are on and off all night. When I get up in the night, which I do every single night now, I can go to the fridge. I don't like... going back to sleep is the most important thing when I go to bed now because I'm up during the night. So just having blue light blocking glasses that I can take on and off, go to the fridge, I can go on my screen, do all those things and they're not annoying and I can still see clearly is vital. So that's why I wear blue light blocking glasses every night.
Yeah. And obviously the company we invest in, which makes a big difference. There's a lot of really shitty blue light blocking products on the market and you want a company that you can trust and you actually know their lenses have been tested in a laboratory where they test the light spectrum and what it claims to block, and you obviously want what it claims to block to be what it actually blocks, and this company does it. It's Blue Blocks, BLUBLOX is the name of the company, blueblocks.com. We have the daytime blue light blockers and we have the nighttime blue light blockers. Some people have asked questions, which one should I get? They are expensive, but if you are willing to make the investment, I suggest the nighttime ones. They'll probably make the biggest difference. But if you do long hours in front of the screen like I do and your eyes water and they get tired and they get blurry towards the end of the day, it is also worth investing in the daylight ones as well, which are clear. So check that out. If you guys end up deciding to purchase a pair, if you use the code MMP, one word, you will get 15% off your order.
Awesome. So the documentary we have this week, I think it just came out. So yeah, released on June 24th. I'm guessing that's all around the world. So it is called Athlete A, and it is, I guess, a documentary following the Indianapolis Star. So that was the original like journalist team in the States that broke the story on the Dr.
Indianapolis Star is the name of a publication.
Yeah. And they were the original team that really broke the whole thing open. And if you haven't heard it, I think pretty much everybody has. It was a couple of years ago where they found the team doctor for American Gymnastics.
USA Gymnastics.
Yeah, and MSU, the college. It's obviously a pedophile or a child molester, and it was like insane news when it broke. So this documentary just follows the process up to that, and it's a hard one to stop watching once you begin.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, when I heard the story break about the team doctor for USA Gymnastics molesting the gymnasts, obviously very disturbing, and then... you know, heard he went to jail and stuff, and he's like, yeah, justice is served, and that's good. But you just don't get anything more than that, really. So it was awesome to be able to get a documentary to understand the story fully. And yeah, it's really disturbing. I mean, obviously, what's unique about gymnastics is, as they kind of illuminate in the documentary, is that they are the really close to the only sport, pretty much the biggest sport where they're children. Like,
yeah.
They're children competing at the Olympics.
I think that there's some problems I had with the documentary, but I agree. The biggest thing I took away from this was watching it, I was like, but I'm no interest in elite sports where children are playing.
Mm.
If I think about like some other big matchup, right? So Conor McGregor is fighting Floyd Mayweather. Just imagine if Floyd Mayweather was 13 and Conor McGregor was 10. Who the fuck wants to go watch children fight?
Yeah.
I have no interest in that. In the same way that, you know, if you're walking past the park and, you know, there's kids are playing soccer, I'm like, that's cool. Like, I kind of just hope they're only parents there to watch.
Yeah.
If you're like, dude, I'm like fucking into 10-year-old soccer. It's like, dude, you have a problem.
Yeah.
It's just, I just think elite sports is for adults. And the fact that maybe kids are better at gymnastics should just be like one of those things that, okay, whatever, I'm going to watch maybe not the best in the absolute world of this, and I'm just going to watch 20-year-old gymnastics. And that's what it like really should be.
Well, I would argue that the teenagers and post-puberty, the adults, are better. I mean, look at the men. They're fucking killing it.
I'm just saying, hypothetically, if they were worse, right? Because I think the reason is here is that they're very
good. They're arguing that they're better,
when they're 13 years old. That should just be like, whatever. You know, we don't watch little children do sports, and we don't force them to do sports because they're not old enough.
Yeah.
It would be like if a kid is a genius and you go, okay, cool, let's just make you CEO of a bank.
Right.
And then you're like crazy under pressure.
They're not ready. Yeah.
And like, you know, they're like, dude, you have to deliver for investors, and his 12-year-old is there, like, I'm smart, but you know, I can't sleep.
Yeah.
Just, I can't sleep. This is just too much for a 12-year-old. I just think, you just
can't sleep.
Let a kid be a kid, and elite sports should be for adults. And I just reckon, I think it's better watching adults do sport when you hear like the crazy stories, like Tiger Woods, man, I've been through this, and I came back and I won the PGA. It's such a better story than like, oh, you know, I just like hang out at home. My parents forced me to train all day and now I'm here.
Yeah. And what are you going to do now that you just won the gold medal? Well, I'm going to go eat Reese's peanut butter cups. It's like, no, you want to hear him be like, oh, dude, this guy lost it in the athlete village. Like, he just was out of control. He was drinking. He was drunk in the streets. Like, that's like a real adult party. And that's what you expect. You don't want these children to be in the athlete. Imagine Michael Phelps walking around. Team gym, like all, like 6 foot, whatever he is, with all his gold medals and stuff. He's like got a beer in his hand. He's like got some cake. He's ready to party. And then there's just this child there. It's retarded. Doesn't make any sense.
It's crazy. And I think, you know, gymnastics is such a good sport. And I do think it's probably one of the reasons it's like maybe not that mainstream popular. It's because like no one wants to follow 12-year-olds and no one's like that interested in 12-year-olds doing gymnastics. You want to see adults and like get involved in their story. Like kids should be looking up to athletes. It shouldn't be like kids that are 13 are already looking at their younger sports heroes.
Yeah.
It doesn't, just doesn't make any sense. And then the whole development of it, you know, it's, I guess it's just luck that in most sports, you know, the top in most sports were getting no professional coaching before the age of 14. I don't think LeBron had tutors in basketball.
No.
You know, neither did Michael Jordan.
Most he definitely didn't have like a massage therapist and a chiro and all that.
Most players don't have any of those things and they still turn out to be incredibly good. You know, Usain Bolt did not have a running coach before 12 and that is just a way better way to do it. And I actually think watching this, they should just get rid of all elite sports, you know, before the age of 12. It's just not necessary.
Is that the problem you have with the documentary?
No, that was just completely side point watching it. I was like, hey, I think children's sport is not that interesting. The problem with the documentary was, you know, this is obviously like a I think there'll be another one on this on Netflix.
On another sport?
No, on this story.
Okay.
This is like the story of like the century, basically, when it comes to like child abuse in sport. I don't think there's ever been anything like it. And I don't really get which side of it they were taking. Like they were either following the story of Athlete A, which that is one particular girl in the story, but they didn't really follow it that much. They kind of bounced around.
Yeah.
Or they were focusing on the cover-up by USA Gymnastics, which is like a huge
story,
right?
Steve Perry, was it? Or something?
Yeah. But that is not over. Like, it's too early. Like, he's still...
He's in jail?
No.
He's not?
No. I researched him after. Like, it's still under investigation. So, he may end up in jail. And that is like a bigger story somehow. It's kind of like when they go and they find like, okay, there's heaps of pedophile priests. But the bigger story is like the church has been covering it
covering up.
That's like that's the crazy story.
Yeah.
But it wasn't really that because that's not over and you know, they didn't really go into it. Or they just do like the Larry Nassar story. That's a crazy story, like about this guy. And to be honest, it was so bad. I don't think they did it justice how bad it was. You know, they like showed a few things like that court case was like 6 days of girls coming in and talking about it. And they're like, oh, it's like 5 minutes over. It was like 6 days. They were like girls. There were people's parents, you know, speaking for the girl and the girl had committed suicide by this point.
No, but did you hear about the dad that committed suicide?
Yeah, there was a dad. Like, there was nuts shit, right? Yeah. Nuts shit that went on. And I don't think they did it justice, how bad it was. They were like, oh, it's bad. But yeah, I don't think they really showed how bad it was. And I don't know. I think they could have just picked one of them. It could have been the cover-up. It could have been him. Or it could have been the girl.
Let me tell you exactly why they fucked the documentary up. My biggest problem with it, right? So, that particular scene you're talking about, where it was in the guilty plea that he had to like sit through all that shit from the girls, right? They all got to say their piece,
In reality was like, I think it was like 5 days.
Which is great, right? I think it's some of the best justice you could ever enforce on people. I had someone I know watch the documentary and like it's not no fault of this person. They're like, oh man, I felt bad for him. I go, that's how you fuck the documentary up. You somehow humanize this fucking piece of shit that's not a human that deserves the worst atrocities ever, like that our systems can come up with. Like, he should be tortured and brutalized just as badly as any terrorist that's crashed into towers before. Like, I think what he did, that trauma that you cause, like, you basically ruined their life, right? So,
because they didn't go into the detail of how bad it was. Only had one girl talk about what he really did to her.
Yeah, but it was 37,000 photos of child pornography he had. 37,000. I don't think. Do you know how long it would take to find 37,000 photos on Instagram? It would take forever. You probably haven't seen 37,000 photos on Instagram the whole time you've had it over the last years. Like, that is insane. Like, he's so sick. And he's probably, if you think about it, he might be the number one of all time because of literally the position he was in, how many years it went on, how much cover up there was, and like just most other child molesters, right? They don't have a job necessarily where there's like they're just sending in small girls every single day to go see him for treatment that you
the
can variety cover up with
of
it.
The amount of people is
like
totally
it was
nuts.
For him. It was like this is a crude way to put it, but it was like the perfect scenario for him, you know. And so And the cover up from the whole, everyone involved in USA Gymnastics that knew about it and didn't do anything, they all need to go to jail. Hmm. Or they all need to undergo something because there was crazy injustice. And I think that if anyone walked away from that documentary feeling sorry for him, they fucked it up.
Yeah, it's because they didn't get, and maybe it's because, you know, you don't want to share too many details of about children and stuff like that. Like, maybe I'm
but they could keep it anonymous. They could just say the story.
There was a way to do it. Many of them are adults, and many of them, I don't think, are trying to keep it secret because they've, like, gone public, done tons of interviews about it. So, like, it is out there. This is not as if, like, they're breaking into it and I somehow found out about it. So, they should have made it, I think, way more obvious how bad this was. You know, done more stuff in the court case. And then, yeah, if they wanted to go into the cover-up, there's, like, so much more they could have talked about. He was, like, a college gymnastics coach for, like, 25 years. And there's, like, reports in the 90s, reports in the 2000s. Like, if you're in those positions, it should be, like, your number one job. Like, even when I coached kids' sport, it was, like, the first thing that happened. Okay, cool. Like, you know, I was only, like, 18. And I was doing, like, the working with kids, all the safety checks. Yeah. And I'm getting all the talks about it. And it's, like, the number one thing you're on guard about.
Yeah.
And it's pretty clear that the owner of American Gymnastics was just way more interested in the sponsorships and the success. Yeah. And you know, he basically he lost his job at the very end because of this whole scandal, and he got a $1 million payout.
What? He got a payout?
Yeah, like a redundancy. He got a $1 million redundancy after he'd made loads of money in there, which is like, yeah, it's nuts, the cover-up, and I don't think they just did it justice in the documentary.
They definitely didn't, but it's worth checking out.
You still got to watch it. I just think there needs to be another one. I think potentially with Netflix these days, they are rushing to get the documentaries out after the story.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the story wasn't that long ago. It's, like, still going, but they, like, have to get the documentary out about it.
Mm.
Maybe sometimes you've got to wait a few more years to, like, really bring out the good documentary.
Athlete A on Netflix. I'm going to give it a 3.5 out of 5.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 2 out of 5, but I still did enjoy watching it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was cool. It was cool to learn more about gymnastics as well and the history of it and stuff, obviously, besides all that scandal stuff. So, it was educational from that standpoint. Mm. All right. So, there you have it, guys. Remember to register if you want to, if you're interested. If you want a 7-day free trial, themymuscleproject.com/projectstrong. Manscaped as well, if you're going to pick it up. It's Manscaped, MANSCAPED. Manscaped.com. And then you can use code MMP for a discount, a 20% discount. All right, guys, thanks so much for tuning in. We'll speak to you next week. Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themymuscleproject.com/theaftershow. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.